Welcome to A Quiet Life. I'm your host, Ruth Amos. 1 Thessalonians 4 says, make it your ambition to lead a quiet life. In this podcast, I chat to all sorts of normal Christians, asking them just how they live their quiet lives and how they integrate their faith into their daily life. I hope that by listening, you will be encouraged to go out and live your own quiet life to the glory of God. You can find the episode show notes, the Quiet Life blog, and other resources at ruthamos.com.au. That's ruthamos.com.au. Now let's get on with the show. Welcome. It's great to have you with us. I'm Ruth from ruthamos.com.au, and this is episode 8 of A Quiet Life, and as I record this, it is Wednesday, the 28th of November, 2018. I listened to a podcast called The Creative Pen, which is a writing podcast, and it's fantastic if you're at all into writing. It's worth listening to. But anyway, I was listening to her last week. That's Joanna Penn who does it. And she said, welcome to the Creative Pen and blah, blah, blah. And this is episode 403. I thought, oh my goodness, episode 403. I've only done 8, and that's a long way from 403 episodes. She's been going for 10 years. But it just sort of suddenly struck me how far we have to go in this journey. But I really hope that when we get to episode 400, we're still going strong. And I hope you hope that too. So I look forward to a long journey together on the A Quiet Life podcast, listening to people's stories. I have plenty more to go. So, I mean, I haven't pre-recorded 400 yet, but I've pre-recorded quite a few. So, yeah, look forward to sharing that with you. Today's guest in episode 8, right at the beginning of the journey, is Anne. And Anne is a lawyer, or has worked as a lawyer. She's retired now. And we talked about all sorts of things, including her journey as a young woman travelling overland across Asia. Oh, my goodness. Which I didn't know was coming. You'll hear my incredible shock. It's wonderful. We talked about how she shows her faith in her work as a lawyer, as a solicitor, and we talked quite a bit about singleness, because Anne has been single for her whole life, and I've been married for most of mine now, and I just wanted to hear from her, I guess, what it's like, how she's found good and bad about being single, and also how people who are married can support her or support other singles. I think in the church we have a bit of a problem with this. We might view singleness as akin to a disability, and it's so not. And it was good to just speak to someone who has been single for all her life, and just have a chat to her about the good and the bad, but mostly the good of a single life. So, yeah, it was great to chat with Anne, and I hope you enjoyed it. I think you really will. This week in my life has held some very good things. So on Friday I launched my book, Deadly Misdirection, written under the R.J. Amos name. I launched it online, so I didn't have a party with people. I had a party at home in my little study here, sitting at my desk on Facebook, and it was fantastic. I enjoyed every minute of it. So thank you, anyone who's listening, who joined me in that party and commented on my little posts and celebrated with me. It was great. And then I've been busy doing sales and sorting out and sending books off and signing them and visiting bookshops and all that kind of stuff. But that's part of the journey, and that's fun. And I want to thank everyone for their support as well, because it just means so much. I've spent a good year working on that book, and to get it out into the world is a scary thing, and to have people's support and encouragement just is such a blessing. Yeah, really is. So that's that. Book is launched. And the other exciting thing that happened for me was that my husband has been working on making a bass guitar from a kit, and he has made it to match my little green Mini that I hoon around the streets in. I love my Mini, and I love my bass guitar, and it's just so much fun to muck around on. I'm not doing anything important on it. I'm just playing it. But yeah, it was fun. On Saturday night, we went to the Southern Gospel Choir concert. So in Tasmania, we have a gospel choir that's, at least 100 people. And so it's amazing. And they performed at our church on Saturday night. So I went and sat in the back row so that when the music lifted me, I could stand up and stick my hands in the air. I could clap and I could sway and I could dance and I didn't bother anybody. And you'll hear on this podcast interview with Anne that I talk about how Moz never comes to concerts with me. But on Saturday night, he did come to the concert with me and he had a good time and he didn't tell me to sit down. So I just want to say, you know, you never know what's coming. We both had such a fabulous time at this concert. And so Andrew Legg and the Southern Gospel Choir, you guys rock. It was fantastic. And the choir has a couple of CDs out, so I'm sure you can find their sound and listen to it. And if you want to listen to their sound and you can't find the actual Southern Gospel Choir, Fred Hammond, they play a lot of Fred Hammond, Kirk Franklin, Richard Smallwood, these people. Oh, it was so good. So yes, obviously I'm still a little bit high from the choir. I was in the choir for a year, I think just a year. It was a bit of a problem for me because I love the music so much that I would go to the Wednesday night practice and I'd sing for an hour and a half or whatever, however long the practice was. And then I'd get home, I'd be high as a kite, I'd be running around the house, just high on the music, you know, just full of praise and joy and adrenaline and happiness and excitement. It would take me another couple of hours to calm down enough to go to sleep. And I need my sleep. So that would just knock me out for the rest of the week. In the end, for my health, I decided I needed to stop being a part of the choir, which is a bit sad. But yeah, anyway, I really enjoyed Saturday night. And I think you may not enjoy gospel music, but I don't think there are many people who don't have some sort of music that fills them with joy like that. And music is just one of those amazing gifts from God that show his creativity and his delight in us. And it's just lovely. So other things that happened, well, on Monday night, Moz went to the year 12 formal. So that was the end of his head of year. Oh, he's got one more thing. He's got the final Thanksgiving service prize giving thing. But they had a good party to finish off the school experience of the kids that he was head of year for. And then on Wednesday night, he went to the year 10 op shop ball, which is something that the school does for the year 10s, where they get dressed up, but it's not the same as the formal. So everything has to be bought from an op shop. And their theme was 90s. The 90s, and so they got dressed up basically in clothes that we wore when we were finishing off high school, and so that was really funny to look at the photos and say, yep, that's what it was like. Anyway, getting old. So that was good too. It's the end of the year. There are all sorts of different activities on, and I'm sure we're all running around doing them. In the week to come, to be honest, I haven't really looked at it. I'm a bit scared to look at it. So I'll let you know what it involved once I've lived it, I think. But, we must be ticking off a few of these big things and having a few less big things to do as it comes up. One of the things that is coming up on Saturday is that I'm getting my writers group together and we're having a time of sharing for Christmas, sharing writing that we've done. So I'm trying to finish a Christmas short story before then, as well as working on my next novel and trying to, you know, flog my book at various bookstores and all the other things that we're doing. So that's fun. I love my Christmas short story. It's a It's science fiction, and I'm hoping I can pull it off, because none of my novels are science fiction, but actually my short stories tend to come out that way. And it's based on a dream that I had. So I had this great dream, and I thought, oh, that'll make a great story. So I woke up and wrote it down in the little book I keep by my bed for such a thing. And now I'm seeing if I can shape it into something that looks anything like my dream. I think it's a bit Doctor Who fanfic, really, but quite fun. So you're learning a lot about me in this introduction. I hope I'm not turning you off. But as we go into the week, I hope that you have a very blessed one and that it's not too full of horrible things, that it's full of joy and light and good things, and that, you know, all the extra activities that you're doing as you go through, yeah, that you have the grace and the energy to do them. One last thing before we head into the interview with Anne. I know that some people have been leaving reviews on iTunes, which is really fantastic. As I look at the store, it says there aren't enough yet. So apparently, and you know, as you know, I'm very new to this, but apparently we need a critical mass of reviews and ratings before it shows up on the iTunes store. So if you could possibly spare, 5 minutes in the next week to write a quick review if you enjoy this podcast, or to just do a star rating, I would really appreciate that, because it helps iTunes see that people are listening and it helps get the word out. That would be awesome. I might try and see if I can find out a way that I can put a link to that in the show notes. I'm not sure that it's possible. Again, new to this, but we'll work it out together, won't we? So have a wonderful week, and I really hope that you enjoy this interview with Anne. Today we're welcoming Anne to our show. Hi, Anne.
Hi.
Anne, in our little introduction, has worked as a solicitor. That's mm-hmm. the right type of lawyer, isn't
yes.
it?
Yeah.
And she's given a whole heap of her time to church and many other activities. So she's been church warden. So if you're not an Anglican, that means she's part of the management body, the overseeing body of the church. So that's in the parish church, the little church, the Sunday morning church. But she's also on the management committee of the diocese. So that's the whole church in Tasmania, the Anglican church in Tasmania. And then she's been, I found out, State Commissioner for the Girl Guides and a member of the school board of St Michael's Collegiate, which is a local Anglican school here, and so much more, like ASIC and Anglicare and our local Heritage Museum that's just down the road from mm-hmm. here. You don't even know where here is, but just believe me. And all this one, Retail Tenancies Code of Practice Monitoring Committee, and Leader, which sounded very interesting because mm-hmm. it's spelled LEADR, and I could go on, like plenty of things, and I won't go on, but Anne's retired, newly retired.
Oh, yes.
But I wanted to talk with her about full and amazing life. I've written here, I really think so. So start with how did you become a Christian?
Well, I used to go to church regularly, and I also went to an Anglican school. But it wasn't until in my last year of school, and we didn't have a youth group at our church, mm. which is still the same church I'm going to, it turns out. And so I was bemoaning that fact to one of my friends, and she said, well, why don't you come to the Presbyterian Fellowship Association, which was nearby. And so they were a vibrant group of young people, and one of the boys in particular took me under his wing, and one day we were down at a beach, and I asked for forgiveness of sins.
Wow.
And although I didn't feel like I'd been really bad as mm-hmm. such, I still felt an incredible weight lifted off my shoulders.
Yeah.
So about 2 years later, I then went overseas, and I decided it was such a big trip to get to Europe that I decided I would go overland through Asia. And in those days, you could go a 30-day trip from Delhi to Istanbul, so we went through India, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Iran and Turkey, and I discovered...
So how old were you then?
24.
Wow.
Yes.
Oh, that's my daughter's age. That's really... sounds like something she would do, yeah.
Well, the good thing was we didn't have internet in those days, so my mum and dad had no idea what I was going to.
Oh, goodness.
If they had, they might have tried to stop me, and they might have been successful in those days.
And were you with a group?
Yes, I was on a bus of about 30 people.
Wow.
Yes,
wow.
We had an excellent guide and a great driver.
Cool.
And off we went. And stayed in hotels every night. Oh, it's fine.
Do go on.
Well, I found it was an amazing life formative experience, as one might expect, but not only because of the various cultures we encountered and languages and topography and ways of life, but also because of the religions. And what struck me was I worship in a very plain, beautiful building. And the Hindus, the Sikhs, the Muslims all had very rich and ornate buildings. And I didn't cope with that at all. And I thought, Christianity isn't like that.
Right.
And when I left the trip, I went down to Paris and I came across Notre Dame and Sacré-Cœur, for instance. And I thought,
Christianity is like that.
No, I thought Catholicism is like this. Ah. So maybe Anglicanism isn't, because it's not, because I'm not used to that. I got to England and found out it can be.
It can be.
And that really affected me. And in fact, it affected me, and I didn't really come back to a strong faith until in my early 30s I was asked if I would consider being State Commissioner of the Girl Guides. And of course they have a promise, and part of the promise is that I promised to do my duty, or in those days it was to do my duty to God. And I thought, how can I show that? And I thought the only way I could think of showing that was to go to church. And so I ended up going back to the same church I'd gone to
as a child,
because I had actually bought my house in the same suburb.
And
then through the Girl Guides I met up with this wonderful group of women who were very strong believers, and they nurtured my faith, and that's when my faith really took off in a big way.
Wow,
so it took quite a few years, actually. There's about 14 years from the beginning when I made a commitment to when I really got more of the message of what I had really committed to.
Wow.
So I'm very grateful to God that I got back to that.
It's that seed being planted early on that you just wait for it to... And how do you cope with ornate churches now?
They're not my favourite, but I've realised that for different people, some people find that they express their joy in being a follower of God by spending a lot of money on the building, and that's not my idea, but it is some people's, and it gives them a great deal of pleasure. It means something to them, and I've learned that God speaks to each one of us in different ways.
Differently. Cool. So, okay, why did you choose to become a lawyer?
That's very simple. When I was small enough that we were actually, my sister and I were lying in bed with Mum and Dad, and I thought I'd be a nurse because that's what Mum had been, but while we were there that particular day, she told us about one time she'd been in the theatre and she'd managed to pour boiling water on her arm. She'd had a fortnight off work, so I thought, I don't want to be a nurse after all. So much my other parent, and my father was a lawyer, so I thought, oh, yeah, I'll do that too.
Cool.
So it's a funny reason for doing it, but it worked.
So, and I didn't write this in the questions, but did you find that going through uni there were less girls in your university classes and stuff, was it?
Yes, very much so. Yeah. That in those days we were very much the minority. And in fact, when I was actually admitted to the bar, there were five women out of 28 who were admitted, and we had our photo in the paper because we were so newsworthy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Awesome. So how did you so then I'm assuming your initial work as a lawyer, you weren't really following the Lord, but then how did you integrate your faith in with your legal work?
Well, I found that the what are called Christian values today was something that had been instilled into me from childhood. And so I was using those. And in fact, I have been on occasion told that I'm too honest, and I'm thinking, how can you be? But anyway, I'd rather be that than the other way. And then I found... Well, and I came to a crux, actually, where I thought that what will I do next? And that's when I became State Commissioner of the Girl Guides. So at that stage, actually, my faith started to kick in a big way. And so I found that the time required to be State Commissioner was actually far more intrusive into workspace than I had anticipated, as well as being very time-consuming in my free time.
Right.
And so I then had to commit to doing the right thing by work in finding time to actually spend that was needed to do the work that you needed for your clients.
Mm-hmm.
And I was fortunate, I was with a large firm, so you had a mix of clients from people who had very small transactional matters to even national and international firms that you were working with. So there was quite a spread in all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a... And also because I was a solicitor, that helped as well, because it meant to say that you could actually make time your own, whereas if you're doing court work, then then most of the time you can actually work around it. Occasionally you can't, but and then you just have to work out that work is top dog for that day. But so that helped a bit. And I found actually that one of the lawyers who was very close to retirement was on... he was a trustee of the diocese, and he actually must have decided that he liked what he saw in what I was doing. Mm. So he referred a lot of his clients when he retired to me.
Right.
And he also, I suspect, suggested that when he retired as a trustee of the diocese that I could
take on the job.
And it's interesting when you start doing roles like that, that over a long period of time, then your bosses start to realise that you have a faith that you're trying to live out, and they certainly see a church connection because that's very real to them. And a couple of other things happened. One was that on one review, they decided that they were going to ask you how many extracurricular activities that you did and how that might help bring clients into the office. Right. And they actually found they didn't need to ask me because they were aware of the law. And so, because after the State Commissioner role, I also made sure I went to them first of all before I took on anything new and asked them. Well, I didn't realise that with the State Commissioner because I didn't realise that was going to impinge on work time.
Yeah, for sure.
And
But that's, I mean, that's one way, just going to ask them is one way of saying this is the kind of person I am, this is the integrity that I stand with. And,
And the other thing that I decided to do was to model what is servant leadership in a leadership role, but to also model that in a workplace situation. And as sometimes I had 11 bosses, so there's a lot of serviting to do there and getting to know them all and be in relationship with them. Yeah. But also wherever you fit it into the office to be in relationship with everybody and to try very hard to treat everybody as I would like to be treated. That's something you don't always see modelled in a workplace.
Yes.
And so that was one way that I was able to also show my faith.
Mm.
There were other ways, but that was they were the two main ways. That...
Did you find that that led to conversations about faith, or did you...
No, one of the problems that I have in life... of many, is that evangelism has become very popular for a very good reason, because we do need to reach out to people, but for whatever reason that's not my gifting. And I used to find, for instance, with my clients that I was doing a lot of wills, and so often when someone comes in and asks for a will to be drawn up, they'll say, oh, it's taking me a while to get here and I'm a bit concerned because after you make a will, the next thing you do is die. And I would always say, well, I've never yet had anyone go outside and get knocked over by the proverbial bus. And then I would say something to them, because that often brought up an end-of-life type of scenario. And it was really interesting. Whatever I said ferreted out the Christians, even though I didn't know that they were Christians, but it never, ever evoked a response in the non-Christians. So for whatever reason, I still haven't got that right.
No, I think it's more that you're watering the seed on the way through, person. I don't feel like evangelism is my gift either, so I really understand that.
So an interesting challenge.
Yeah, just living faith.
But many of them knew that I was a Christian.
Then that's the important thing, really, isn't it?
Yes, and the same thing as I found that we do a floodlighting appeal, and so anyone who's been living around this area for any length of time, my name's on the bottom of that, so they've worked out that I'm connected with the church. So
that's an appeal to raise funds to floodlight the cross on the top of the church. They know. Which I guess makes it all the more important to really live out your faith in those little things, because it does come out. People do see it. Awesome. Okay, so changing subject a little bit. So Anne has been single all her life, which is not a disability, right?
No, not at all. I wouldn't have done half of what I've done if I had been married, I guess is half the answer.
So how did you cope, like when all your friends started getting married as a young person, how did that?
It was quite interesting in that sometimes it was very difficult. I realised that two of my closest friends actually asked me about whether they should marry their husbands, and they were actually asking my opinion, and I didn't actually realise that until I heard they got married, or that they'd said yes.
Yeah.
One of my friends asked me to be a bridesmaid, and so I was quite involved in her wedding, and that was really nice. And my sister also asked me to be a bridesmaid, and that was just after she'd moved to Melbourne, so she actually got Mum and Dad and me to organise the wedding.
Right.
And so, here. And she seemed to be really happy with what we did. So that was actually, in one sense, a lot of fun. But the flip side of that is that we had one neighbour, for instance, who said something to me. I don't remember the words, but I found them quite cutting and unkind, which may not have been how they were meant, and I certainly tried not to react because she was my younger sister and she'd married before I had. And the reality is that all my sisters have married and I haven't. And the reason for that, as much as anything else, is that I just haven't met somebody who I want to spend the rest of my life with. It's a very long time. And I particularly realised that when I became State Commissioner, because that was a five-year term, and I realised that was the longest I'd actually committed to before I started.
Yes.
Even though it turns out I've been involved in a lot of things for many years.
Yeah, but to make that previous commitment.
Yes, it's a really big thing, and I've always regarded it as something not to be undertaken lightly. And for me, the opportunity just hasn't arisen in a way that would be in the least bit satisfactory for me.
And as you say, that's just freed you up to do...
It has, in fact, yes.
Yeah.
So, I didn't realise that at the time. The hardest time is actually when you are meeting with, for instance, your school friends, and it turns out, I think now I'm probably the only one who's not married. And so most of them did marry, most of them had children, and quite frankly, a conversation when they have young children is about young children, and they would say to me, oh, Anne, so you're still practicing lawyer, yes. Oh, very nice. And that was it, and they moved on. Yeah. And that is actually really difficult because they gave no value to what I was doing whatsoever because I was doing something that didn't mean anything to them and it wasn't part of their plan. And who knows how they felt about it? I don't. But that was the hardest thing, I think, of all. In fact, when you find out that you're not the same as your peers, and yet I had really good friends who have been very special in maintaining the relationships and including me with times with their children, for instance. There have been some really lovely things that have happened as well. But I've always treasured those as being extra special and not deserved. It's been lovely, very special.
So I guess that the way that the church could support single people amongst them is really just to be interested in your life.
Yes, and to affirm you in what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. So and then as you've gone along in life and become a more mature person, singleness been good or?
Yeah, well, it has actually. In that I realised after a while, and this took quite a while, but for instance, if you're married and if you have children, then a single person can be inclined to think, oh, well, there's already ready-made people who are going to do the things you want to do with them. And it doesn't quite work like that, does it?
It doesn't work.
No. And even worse, when they say yes, they'll come along and it's grudgingly and they don't actually throw their heart and soul into enjoying it the way you want it to be enjoyed.
Exactly. Like my husband and I... I go to concerts, he doesn't. And so it's much better that I go to concerts and he doesn't than that he's sitting there at the concert saying, Ruth, sit down, sit down, which he does. Love him greatly, but we don't go to concerts together anymore. So, yeah, it's that thing,
And I think there's this idea that everyone's got a better life than, or someone's got a better life than you have and that you know there's somebody, but you don't. Everyone has their ups and downs and roundabouts and that's part of a normal life that God's given us. And we need to accept that. And it will be like that for the rest of our lives. The challenges will just change over time.
Yeah. So live your own life and live it to the full.
Yes. And take the opportunities that come your way because it's amazing what it does. If those opportunities are the ones that you believe is how you want to spend your time.
Yeah, for sure. Mm. I mean, looking at the list of things you did, I mean, you must spend like 80 hours a week working on this stuff.
I have at times, and yet times on your own are also really important. One of the things I love about being single is that I get most mornings to myself, and I'm a very slow starter in the morning. I'm getting slower and slower, and this started before I left work, and they were very accommodating. I was at the same firm for 34 years, so that helped you get to know each other very well. And it tells you a few things about me that I like stability and loyalty. And I found that that time and having a process in the morning just sets me up for the rest of the day to do things. You do need time, whoever you are. And, for me that's a really important time.
Mm.
And if I had husband and children, I'd have to find some other way of doing it.
But
that is something that's quite special. I absolutely love that time. It's very treasured.
Brilliant. Mm. Very nice. Very nice. So you're retired now, and there's a massive adjustment. I'm thinking, are you still part of a few of your different bits and pieces?
Yes, I'm still involved with the church at both the parish and diocesan level.
Yeah.
And so that's actually kept me quite busy.
Yes.
I'd always planned to go on a holiday just after I retired, actually. And
overland to Asia again, is it?
No. Well, actually, as it turned out, I didn't realise this is how it's going to happen, but it turned out to be Israel, Jordan, and Palestine. Yes, that was an amazing trip, actually.
Yes.
Wow. Yes. And then I added a bit more to it, so that I was away for a bit over 6 weeks. And then I'd also been asked by our seniors minister, who's also the seniors minister for our diocese, whether I would help him with some seminars.
Right.
And that was in August. So I thought, well, I'll wait till after August.
Yep.
And then by that stage I should know how retirement's going and what I can do to fill in the rest of the time. And now I'm wondering how on earth I'm going to fit anything else in because I seem to have either slowed down or otherwise I have found other things to do.
Mm.
And it's been quite interesting because I'm not sure what I thought the other things would be, but they've turned out at the moment to be very small in one sense, pastoral things which are really important to the people involved.
Mm.
You know, one's an older couple who have moved into aged care accommodation unexpectedly after they each had a fall.
Mm.
And the other one's been a really interesting situation as well. And it turns out that actually I'm enjoying this time, but it wasn't how I thought I was going to be spending my time.
Yeah.
And there have been changes in one situation. I'm sure there'll be ongoing changes in so I'm probably in for a period of more change than I thought I wanted because, as you can see, I quite like stability.
Yeah, for sure. And it's the unknown, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. You're stepping out again, not knowing.
Yeah. You used to know you get up in the morning and you go into work. Now you get up in the morning and then, different. Yeah. Dad always says that God's retirement home is 6 feet long and 2 feet high and 6 feet under. So, that's amazing. I'm excited for you.
As you can see, I'm excited.
For sure. That's awesome.
Whatever it means. Mm.
So, okay, when do you feel closest to God?
That's probably other people said to you. It's actually a really interesting question. And one of the things that's made me realise is that I am blessed that most mornings I wake up and the first thing I think of is either Lord God, Heavenly Father, or Lord Jesus.
Wow.
I know, it's very special.
Yeah, that really is.
So that's a really nice way to start. Do I make proper use of that? No. Have to be honest and say. I certainly feel close to God in nature, and we're very blessed, particularly because we have some places here where you even feel that maybe man hasn't been there before, and so you feel very close in those circumstances. But even when you don't, when you just see a flower that you know has been grown since Australia was settled by a white man, then because we've imported them, then you still see this wonderful beauty.
Mm.
And the The other times when I feel close to God are when you're actually spending time with Him, either reading the Bible or praying. But and it, obviously it doesn't happen every time at all. But I do think it's important to try and be regular about these things, and so I try to push through regardless.
So do you do that every morning? Is that your part of your morning routine?
No, it isn't. No, no, I'm an owl, not a fowl.
Yeah, yes.
That's one reason why I need slow in the morning. And so, and in fact, I wonder whether one reason why I get those words first thing in the morning is because often it has been in bed, and so it's the last thing I do.
Yeah, lovely.
So, but I, even when it's very late, I still try to do that. To make sure that I do spend some time, because I figure that if we don't spend some time in God's Word and some time praying, then it's not to be unexpected that we don't ever hear Him.
That's a good point.
And then, and the other thing I found is sometimes you find you're unexpectedly close to God, and because you might send up an urgent prayer when you're in a situation, especially with those where you think, oh my goodness, what am I meant to say next? Or you get feedback on something that you did and you think, wow, I never ever thought it was going to have that sort of an impact on someone. I find it's amazing actually how I get feedback.
Yeah.
Which has probably got something to do with what my actual gifting is.
It's a blessing to know that God wants to use us to build His kingdom.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it's unbelievable that He should want to use me anyway. definitely not worthy, and I don't do anything really that's all that exciting. But because He works through us, then He does use you.
Yeah.
And so for some people, the impact you can have becomes really exciting, and so I find that's exciting for me.
Yeah, for sure. Mm. Now, what exactly would you describe your gifting as?
Well, my major gifting is actually encouragement.
Nice.
Yes. So it's a really nice gifting to have. I find it's no trouble at all to... I think, actually, that while I possibly had the gifting for a long time and before I recognised that's what I had, again, it's when you see other people. Mm. And one time I was asked with the Girl Guides, before I became State Commissioner, to give a vote of thanks. And I knew that the person who I was thanking had been through a very difficult time, so I tried to make it really worthwhile.
Mm.
And it was interesting because I had written out some great words and I'd said them so many times, I knew them off by heart. And then I thought, oh my goodness, we're in the town hall. There are a lot of people there. I don't know them all. I don't want to get this wrong. So I decided to take the piece of paper up with me.
Mm.
But I'm actually quite good at speech making too.
Yes.
So I was able to read the speech, but also most of the time be looking out at the audience and at the person I was thanking. And there was one person who stood out to me, and she came up to me afterwards and congratulated me on the vote of thanks, and I wondered who on earth she was because I'd never met her before. Mm-hmm. Anyway, she turned out to be a very faithful Christian, and we became really good friends. She took me under her wing, and she became one of my mentors, and it was very special indeed. And from that, I learned that was something I could do too, so I'm not frightened to go up to somebody I've never met and to say to them, you did a really good job there.
Yeah, and you don't know what will come from that.
No, you don't. No. We just hope it's... Most people find that really helpful.
Oh, yes, just in itself, it's amazing. Yeah.
Yes.
Mm, absolutely. Mm. All right, final question.
Mm-hmm.
I've grilled you for long enough. What's one thing about God and Christianity that you wish everybody knew?
Oh, I always have got more than one thing.
Okay, take it away.
So it's John 3:16 and the two great commandments.
Mm.
In other words, for God so loved the world that He gave His one and only Son, that whoever believes in Him should not perish but have everlasting life. And love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind and with all your strength.
Mm.
And love your neighbour as yourself.
Yeah.
And so if we could all learn that hard as it is sometimes, and that's one of the things I've been taught in the last few years, that sometimes when you don't really love yourself because of something you've done or perceived you've done, you're still asked by God to use your giftings and to push through it and to keep on working at it to find out what the truth of that is and whether you're right in feeling so bad about yourself or not. And but you are still to be his soldier and servant here on earth.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Thank you so much for your sharing. I'm sure people will be very encouraged and blessed by that.
Oh, well, thank you for the opportunity. I never guessed I'd be doing this in my retirement either.
Good stuff.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope this has been encouraging for you. I want to especially thank Catherine Joy Music for the theme music. If you would like to help me fund this podcast, you can find me at patreon.com/quietlife and help me out for as little as a dollar a month. If you want to contact me, you can email ruth@ruthamos.com.au or find me on Facebook at Ruth Amos Author or tweet me at A Quiet Life. I'd love to hear from you. God bless. See you next week.